Broadcast.
You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby, broadcast live to the cosmos on the Heritage Radio Network.
Good Sunday to you, and welcome to another episode of Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby. Our show today has been produced by Jack Inslee, engineered by Nat Wiener, and sponsored very generously by the Hearst Ranch. Hearst Ranch is the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. Since 1865, the Hearst family has raised cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of the central California coast. The result is beef with an extraordinary flavor that's as memorable and natural as the surrounding landscape. For more info, go to HearstRanch.com. And I have to say, too, that my theme song is also courtesy of Hearst Ranch. Brian Kenny, who works with the Hearsts, composed that one afternoon here at the Heritage Radio Network, and it's really kind of the pride and joy of my life. I'm really happy about that. So my guest today, who I'm very excited and honored to have on the show, is Adam Moskowitz, who is owner of Larkin, which is a bonded warehouse, pretty much responsible for the introduction of most of the world's great cheeses to New York City.
Wow. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Not just New York City, actually. I'd like to believe that we are the gateway of specialty cheese from Europe to all of the United States. But yes, in New York City, there is a lot of cheese that comes through Larkin.
And I should say, too, Euro Larkin, which is now your European counterpart that's at the...
Rungis
in France.
Yes, Rungis. For all of you who don't know, Rungis is the epicenter of food based out of Europe. It is a marketplace for all things food and even flowers and things of that sort. But there we consolidate cheese. We have Euro Larkin, which is a sister company to Larkin, which actually my father and I organized about 20 months ago. And so far, so good. It's going well.
Congratulations.
Why, thank you.
I feel like, you know, this, yeah, Rungis is basically like Hunts Point Market times like a bazillion.
A bazillion.
Yeah.
Definitely a bazillion. A bazillion, a bazillion to infinity, actually.
I haven't ever been to Rungis, but I really want to make the pilgrimage at some point.
I really must take you there.
Okay.
Next time we go to Bra.
Let's
stop off at Euro Larkin.
Okay.
And we'll take you over to Rungis. We'll have one of my favorite restaurants there is
in the market in
Rungis.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's like the best seafood ever because it's like
brought in that day.
Exactly.
That's pretty incredible. That's what Hunts Point is missing, you know? Are there any restaurants there?
No. And I don't think any of us would really want to go up there, even if there were restaurants.
Yeah, there's like that guy with the coffee truck with the weird, sad Danishes, and that's it.
Yeah, not many people go up to the Bronx, often. So, thanks for having me.
Oh, like I said, it is an honor and a pleasure. And I, have wanted to have you on the show for a while because I feel like you and your family are... really, sort of the unsung heroes of this whole food revolution that's happening in our country right now. Because,
wow.
No, for real.
I don't know. That's okay. I mean, food. Yeah. Okay. Especially food. Cheese. Yeah.
Cheese specifically. I mean, of course, I'm like cheese centric. But can you tell us a little bit about how your family's business got started and how, you know, your dad changed it and now you're kind of taking the reins to bring it to the next level?
Well, gosh, I think we only have a half hour for the show.
Let's do a brief summary.
We'll do the cliff notes. My grandfather started as a push cart pusher of dairy, you know, butter, egg, milk, down in the downtown Manhattan area, Lower East Side.
Right where the Essex Market is today.
Right where the Essex Food Market is today, which you're very familiar with. Mm-hmm. I love your shop, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
It's absolutely amazing. Shout out to Benoit. Hello, Benoit. I hope you're listening.
He listens in every Sunday.
Does he listen every Sunday with his little beautiful baby?
Aww.
So, yeah, my grandfather was a food, butter, and milk distributor. He worked up the ranks at a company called Walker Butter and Egg. Walter Butter and Egg was a New York distributor that also became a pioneer in imports from Europe, specifically France, but also Switzerland and Germany, and I mean all of Europe, because France has always been, Rungis has always been basically a gateway from Europe to America for specialty food products.
And when was that? I mean, when did that really start to take off, that whole import business for cheese and dairy?
Yeah, I mean, it started, I'd say, after the Second World War, and evolved from there. I mean, it began with things as simple as butter and things of that sort, and industrial cheese. But then it just evolved from there. So I'd say, I mean, it really took off with the process of containerization, which happened in the early 60s.
Can you explain containerization? Because I'm pretty sure we are experiencing containerization right now, because we are actually inside a shipping container.
I know. I could almost, it's so weird being in this container right now. I almost feel I almost feel being on the ocean. I almost feel like we're at the sea right now, being in this container. Containerization was basically it was the advent of our global village, if I may. I'd say there's two key components that contribute to the global village that we're eating in right now, and pallets is one of them. These little wooden constructs that forks of a forklift and things of that ilk can move things around, and then those pallets go into containers, and containers is what changed from break bulk. I mean, imagine close your eyes right now and just imagine
they're closed.
Are they closed?
Mm-hmm.
They're closed.
Mm-hmm.
They are closed.
Absolutely.
So imagine just a big ship and a big hole in the ship, and in that hole there's just a tons of stuff, and they put them in these big nets, and these big cranes take the nets and swing them overboard. And that's like how we used to do cheese, which, as you know, for the cheese that we're involved in, that's not really good for cheese.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely not.
Cheese and nets don't work.
Get smushed.
They get smushed.
Get smushed. Poor little guys.
Poor little guys.
Yeah. So containers, I mean, and these are refrigerated containers, obviously.
Yes, yes. So these containers are refrigerated, which is actually a small percentage of the overall transport of containers throughout the world. I'd say the percentage literally is like 1.8% of all containers are refrigerated containers.
And what temperature does that cheese travel at?
36 to 38 degrees Fahrenheit.
Okay, so it's above freezing, obviously, but it's keeping it pretty stable, so it's not going to ripen too fast as it's coming across or anything like that.
No, I mean, we hope for a sincere level of like homeostasis, actually, where they can continue to ripe moderately if they may or need, but we try to pull that temperature down to kind of keep it even.
Yeah, because if you think about it, I mean, for our listeners, cheese is obviously full of different bacteria and molds, and the warmer it is, the more excited they're going to get, and exactly, the more they're going to work. And if you keep them kind of dormant, then that's good. And it's actually very necessary, because a lot of the fresh cheeses and soft cheeses and things, products like butter or other fresh dairy, you know, that's it. How long do they spend at sea?
Good question. They're actually only really at sea for about 7 days, but they're in the container for about, I'd say, about 12 days from
that's it. From, I thought, padding. It was a lot longer than that, actually.
Nope.
Okay.
And interestingly enough, it's pretty much been that amount of time frame since forever.
Since the 1960s.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, or I guess even since before then, because if they were bringing anything over from Europe, that sea voyage can take
a
week, huh?
It still always took about a week.
Okay.
Which is pretty cool, actually.
Wow,
yeah.
Wow.
So back to containers. So containers, really, a quick long story about how containers were born was basically a guy driving a truck, waiting on the port to get his truck unloaded. And he looked at it and was basically like, why don't they just pull my truck up onto the ship?
Absolutely.
Duh. And from there, there was also the same revelation as it related to the trailways. Not the trailways, the trainways.
Right.
Same concept, basically, of just pulling the cart up onto the ship. And actually, one of the first container ships actually had rails on it, because they would pull the containers with actually the wheels on it up onto the ship and lay them on rails.
Okay. And now, since obviously trucks have taken over everything, the rails aren't quite so necessary.
Correct.
Yeah.
And they're more versatile now, too. Actually, the containers, it was like kind of like putting the puzzles together. Now it's the container drives the concept of, you could take the container and put it on a chassis, and you could put it on a railway. So the container kind of took its lead after it was to be following from the vehicles of tractors or trainways.
Wow.
Anyway.
And so, you know, this is all pretty specialized stuff. Yep. Like you said, you know, it's, you know, a very small percentage of the total shipping and container industry. And so how does Larkin play into that? How do you what happens to that cheese once it's put in the container at Rungis? And then,
well,
where
are the
across?
Ones, we're actually the ones putting it in the container, actually. That's,
okay.
That's the thing. That's what we do. Larkin is basically a logistics company that cares for specialty cheese, perishables in nature, but cheese is the commodity we work with most, because this type of product requires a considerable amount of care and consideration, especially because French cheese specifically, the way it gets moved around is local based, right? These suppliers are delivering product into Rungis routinely, and it's meant for the Paris French market. So we have to actually prepare the pallets and stuff the containers and bring them over to the United States. And that's what we do it for. We do it for everybody that needs to get cheese out of Europe into the United States.
Wow.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's just such a specialized niche that you guys occupy.
Yes.
So then, I mean, I don't want to, you know, obviously you don't have to divulge any details you don't want to, but, you know, when I first heard the term bonded warehouse and the fact that, you know, international law doesn't even really apply there or something.
It's like a sovereign nation. It's like our own little like sovereign nation. Yeah.
What the heck is up with that? So then all these imports get to your warehouse and you've got to sort through them before, and then customs has to come and clear those items.
Yeah, that's. I mean, that's especially with French cheese, which is so delicate and has such, we'll say, a limited short shelf life. We basically act as an arm of customs. We're a fiduciary responsibility to the U.S. government. We receive containers straight off the pier and clear product at Larkin. That's what it means to be a bonded warehouse. And from that facility, the stuff gets customs cleared as well as FDA cleared. And if and when stuff needs to be sampled and or viewed and or destroyed, customs or FDA comes to Larkin. And we do the procedure. So it's really cool. We basically, what's cool about Larkin is I could actually pull a box off of an inbound vessel within about 12 hours of it arriving. So today, for example, there's going to be a vessel that arrives called the Mole Endowment, and I will have 3 containers of French cheese delivered to my door probably by noon tomorrow.
Wow.
And we'll clear the product at Larkin.
And do you guys have in-house inspectors to do that, or do you?
No.
Is it like USDA, where you have to have a USDA guy there inspecting, or do you guys do it?
There's like field teams that show up in like government cars with with license plates that say like USDA, and they show up with like their clipboards and their pens and their files and reports, and they come and they take samples and they take pictures and they take cheese, and it's really kind of cute, because like I like always smile with these guys. They first of all, they never take anything. I offer them water, no. Coffee, no. Espresso, no. A piece of cheese, no. They're like sampling this cheese. I'm like, do you know what type of cheese you're sampling right now? They're like, no, we were just at like a plastic toy facility from Japan before this warehouse. I was like, oh my God.
You're like, you're missing out, man.
Take a bite. Like, yeah. take a pound and a half extra for yourself. It's good cheese. But they don't really.
It's sad to be one of those guys.
It is. But you know what's interesting is actually the FDA specifically this past year has really stepped up, actually. What's interesting is I love cheese, and I love eating cheese and talking with you about cheese and stuff, but I really am in the logistics business, and seeing how in the last 10 years things like 9/11 impacted importing product in the United States. Because I mean, we're being cute and we're talking about how we bring containers into the United States, but I try to get people to really think about it as it relates to when you travel internationally and what it's like to travel internationally now, where you have to take off your shoes and you have to take off your belt and you have to take off your jacket. You have to have all of your materials that are liquid based in a clear bag. And I just think about all of that parameter and then imagine what it's like to actually do that with a 40 foot container of product that has, 40 to 50 different supplier sources and has a destination of the entire continental United States.
Yeah.
So the process is really intricate, actually.
Yeah.
And it's just, I don't know, it's really cool.
Yeah. No, it's unbelievable. And it's like I said, one of those pieces of the puzzle that people don't usually think about. And even when they do think about it, they're like, oh my God, that is so complicated. I can't start to wrap my finger around or my head around. We actually have to take a quick break. But when we come back, we're going to talk more about Larkin and about what's going on at Larkin this month. Stay with us on Cutting the Curd. Welcome back to Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby. Our show today has been sponsored by Hearst Ranch. You can check them out at hearstranch.com, suppliers of some of the finest grass-fed and grass-finished beef in the United States.
Beef.
Yes, goes good with cheese. And my guest today is Adam Moskowitz.
Hello.
Hello, owner of Larkin.
Larkin.
Larkin Logistics.
Life is a lark. So start Larkin. How Larkin for life. You want me to start rhyming? I'm a poet. I'm an artist. I'm an MC. I like to rhyme for free. I like to let everybody see what I mean when I think about my cheese family. I like curds. I love whey. I love to say that every day is okay if you have a piece of cheese to go with your day. See, it just comes off my head like that.
I love it.
Isn't it great?
I love it.
It's
yeah.
Really funny.
Like we said, all food people are like
freaks.
In some way, shape, or form. And you know, so that's good. So you bring like the rapper, poet part and, you know, whatever. Mm. I went to art school. I could like make paintings of
you
cheese.
You are actually a sick painter. I think a lot of people don't. Nope. You know what? Excuse me, audience. I don't know if all of you know this, but I do. Anne is a ridiculously talented painter. I mean like old school, traditional, still life, realistic, almost like a photograph painter. It's wild. You would never know that, but I know it.
I'm blushing.
She is. She's
making me all verklempt.
She has a red shirt on now and her cheeks are redder than her shirt.
Oh, man.
All right, let's say though. Sorry. Woof. I love this. You know, it's funny. They always say I had a face for radio. So what does it mean if I'm on internet radio?
It's just like, yeah, too beautiful for the cosmos to comprehend. That's like, what it means.
Oh, no.
It's like it's such a powerful medium. The internet radio.
I just love hearing my voice.
I know. It sounds pretty cool in the headphones,
doesn't
right?
Doesn't it? It's like I hear myself thinking right now as I talk to you. It's great. So why are we here today?
I'm thinking about this crazy event that you're organizing at Larkin.
Yep.
So I think it's very cool, actually. I was talking this past fall with Jason Hines, who
Jayski Love.
Jayski Love. I just learned that today.
DJ named Jayski Love.
That was his DJ name. But he was talking about how he got involved with the cheese business. And, you know, he works for Neal's Yard Dairy in London, which is one of the
yummy
benchmark cheese companies of the entire world. They are really, really wonderful company. And he was talking about when he got into the business, having to sort of bridge this gap between these sort of sweaty armpitted sales guys in polyester shirts who were like the cheese industry of yesterday.
Yep.
And then thinking about, no, but wait, what's going on? What are we supporting? Who? How are we doing this? Who are we reaching? And talking, just pretty much reshaping
the cheese chain.
Yeah, the cheese business in London. And they successfully did that by partnering with all these
cheesemakers,
small producers, and being the ones to really invest in their story and invest in that community. And I feel like that is what you are doing at Larkin right now with this, especially with this event, which I want you to explain to us because it's so fun and exciting.
What a great segue, and thank you. yes, I would like to officially announce on internet radio the first annual Cheesemonger Invitational.
Whoa! We need a sound effect for that, like an explosion.
Yeah, I wish we could capture the sound of cutting cheese. It'd be like, oh, it'd be really subtle.
Wouldn't be quite like the samurai thing. It would be more like,
yeah, that's about it.
So when is this Cheesemonger Invitational?
Well, first of all, you could find out about it at cheesemongerinvitational.com. It's one word. And this event is taking place on June 26th. That's Saturday night, 2 weeks from yesterday, otherwise known as June 26th.
At?
Doors open at 7 p.m. The competition begins at 8:30.
And it is at Larkin.
It is at Larkin.
You can see, listeners, you cheese lovers can see this bonded warehouse for with your own eyes and know that it exists and that it's magic and that, you know, things happen there.
You literally, as soon as you walk through the front doors of Larkin, you smell cheese. And it's a cornucopia of cottle curd. I just love saying that, by the way.
It is a cornucopia,
cottle curd.
The cheese there is very, very happy. So tell me, how did this idea come about?
Well, it came about because I think long and hard about concepts similar to what you were just discussing with Neil Jard and how they differentiated themselves in the marketplace. It starts first with the word monger. And monger is a traditional term that dates back to food markets, similar to the ones you work at right now, where you know, there'd be a fishmonger and a meatmonger and a cheesemonger. And they were all basically retail stall individuals, people, you know, making the connection between the land and the table. And I believe now we live in a global village. I believe now that that key people that have great sources need to expand what it means to be a monger. It's not just about the retail individual interacting specifically with the end user. And Neil Jard, for example, really captivated that. Here was a shop in London, and the owner of the shop realized that in order to present great product and deliver it in a way that the maker intended it to be, he'd go and interact with the actual maker. Yeah.
Crazy. Who'd have thunk?
Who would have thunk it?
No, now it seems elementary, but you know, that is...
It was accessible and you could go and do it. You could actually go meet the guy that made the cheese.
We were so successfully disconnected from our food supply, thanks to the global village in many ways.
Yep.
That, you know, all of a sudden to do that was kind of revolutionary.
And then not only that, they went backwards and forwards. Because Neil Jard also went to the actual monger over in, let's say, the new market, such as the United States. And they would educate those people about their product. And so my point being is that the concept of being a monger is something that I don't think is retail-based anymore. I think it's about selling a product and understanding everything about that product as much as you can and telling that story as well as you can. And so...
And honoring it as a profession, because it's a very important profession. And people kind of, you know, can have their preconceived notions about the retail business or customer service or whatever, but it's a really crucial part of the food supply.
And I love cheese.
Me too.
And I believe the cheesemonger's role in today's world is to be the conduit between a whole form piece of cheese and the next consumer of that piece of cheese. I get very sad when I see 25 pieces of cheese wrapped in unbreathable cellophane waiting for a excited hand to grab out and bring it to its mouth one night. It doesn't work like that. I think a cheesemonger is an age-old art form where you truly honor the land, you honor the animal, you honor the maker, the man who actually broke the milk into its curd and whey. You honor the Afinor, you honor the whole tradition. And I think cheesemongering as a tradition is something that is mildly overshadowed as we live in a world where specialty or whole food is commonplace.
Is prepacking our food.
Yeah.
prepacking those stories. So how are we going to get tell me about the event. That's what I want to know about. What are people going to do? What are these? Who's competing?
Okay. I want the rundown. You want the rundown. I'm sorry.
I want the rundown.
You want the press bites. Yeah. Okay.
Well, people got to come. Everyone out there who's listening to the show has got to come out to Larkin.
I'd hurry up, guys. We're fastly running out of tickets, actually, surprisingly enough. The event is basically the idea of bringing together cheesemongers from across not only our country but the world, and provide them a competitive environment to showcase the skills that cheesemongering is all about, such as cutting correctly, wrapping correctly, presenting correctly, knowing the product correctly. So long story short is I've got 9 cheese shops from around the country competing.
I can read the list. Fromaggio Kitchen from Boston.
What?
Murray's from New York City.
Yep.
Bedford Cheese Shop from Brooklyn.
Brooklyn!
Rubiner's Cheesemongers from the Berkshires.
What?
DeBruno Brothers from Philly.
Philly's in the house.
Love them.
Yep.
Zingerman's from Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Yes.
Byright Market from San Francisco.
San Francisco!
Liberty Heights Fresh.
From Salt Lake City.
I love it. And last but not least, St. James Cheese Company from
New Orleans.
Nolens.
I'd like to send a little love out to New Orleans. I love you guys down there. You're going to persevere through these hard times.
Yeah.
Let's not digress.
Okay, so people are going to come to Larkin, and what are they going to do? What are the competitions?
So we have 6 challenges that are going to occur simultaneously as well as concurrently. And what I mean by simultaneously, there'll be 9 setups for all of the 9 mongers represented. There'll be individual mongers, 1 monger representing each cheese shop, and they will participate in the series of challenges. And the first challenge is, I believe, So Fly I.
Mm-hmm.
And the second challenge is Dapper Wrapper.
So Fly I, wait. Dapper Wrapper, I understand. Wrapping cheese properly. What's So Fly I?
So Fly is, I think it's important for cheesemongers, when you say, I want a quarter pound, that they cut you a quarter pound.
Love it.
Right? If you say you want a half pound, they cut you a half pound. Nothing pisses me off more than ordering a quarter pound and getting a third of a pound of cheese.
Yeah.
Especially when I'm paying like $46 per pound for a piece of cheese, which I'm known to do. I want what I ordered.
Absolutely.
So Fly Eye is the ability for a cheesemonger to look at a piece of cheese and cut it by eye correctly.
Awesome. We have a bell in my store for that. There's a little Bavarian cowbell that was actually given to me by
Sarah?
Norbert.
Yes. Norbert. Oh my God, I love that guy. He's so adorable.
So now whenever anyone cuts an exact Cos quarter cookie. Pound or a half pound in my store, we ring the bell.
Cos cookie.
Yeah.
I love Norbert.
So, okay. So Fly Eye, Dapper Wrapper. What's coming up next?
Then we got Dare to Pair.
Ooh.
Yes. My beverage partner for the event is Butternuts Beer and Ale.
Okay.
Do you know Butternuts Beer and Ale?
I do not.
I bet you do, actually. They're the cans of beer that have like the pork slap.
Oh yeah.
And then
of course.
The thundering stout with the cow on the stout.
Okay.
They are an amazing brewer from upstate New York.
Okay.
Local.
Yep.
And Chuck is graciously provided the beer pairing element to the evening. I've actually decided for this event.
His goal is pork slap goes with everything.
Everything no. smack. no, I don't know about you. What do you think? What do you think goes better with cheese, wine or beer?
Oh, I'm down for all of it. I'm not gonna draw that line in the sand. I think
you sound so Swiss right now.
Tasty fermented liquids and tasty fermented solids all go well together.
Oh, you're so nice.
I know, I'm neutral.
You're so neutral.
You're
so non-contrarian.
Yeah.
Yes, I would say there's a perfect pair everywhere, always.
I think I personally prefer beer with my cheese. I'll be honest with you. A great wine goes with everything greatly, but I prefer personally beer and cheese. I think cheesemongers. I think I'm gonna go on a limb here, and I'm gonna say cheesemongers in general.
Mm-hmm.
They go for beer.
They go for beer. Well, cheesemongers, you know, we're poor. We can't buy tons of fancy wine.
So the third challenge. is Dare to Pair. Okay. Where the day of the event, we're going to give the mongers a beer from Butternuts to pair, and they're going to have the entire event showcase of cheese to choose from, and they're going to pair something. And then the next challenge is Sign of the Times, which is the idea of writing a sign based on the cheese that was paired with the beer. The idea being like special of the day, cheese of the day. We want to see the marketing skills of the monger.
Sure. And some shops are renowned for their signs. Of course, that whole thing was pioneered by Steve Jenkins, who was just on the main course right before us.
We love you, Steve. Cheese primer. Go get it. Yeah. If you don't got it.
So, okay. Signs. I love it.
And then Slate Your Plate, which is going to be a presentation prepared by the cheesemongers. Actually, here, this is an interesting part of the competition. I'm actually asking all competing cheesemongers to bring 3/4-pound pieces of cheese and one pairing element to the actual event.
Mm-hmm.
They have to bring like a little doggy bag of cheese. Idea being, we want to see what their selection is like from their shop. We want to see their choice and harmony of product. We want to see their quality in terms of how cheese lasts after it's cut from a shop and makes it to its destination, mm-hmm. the home.
I love it.
Yeah. And then one pairing element, obviously, is just to see the harmony between. So that's Slate Your Plate. And then the final challenge is Taste Your Paste.
Ooh, tough.
Tough.
I remember. This is a blind tasting. Yeah,
5 cubes of cheese.
From all over the world.
I've selected this from anywhere in the world. Thousands of choices. Oh my God.
You're like the Wizard of Oz.
Thousands of choices.
Wow. So then the cheesemonger has to taste and identify those 5 cheeses.
Yes, they have to identify. There's 5 categories: milk, style, age, country of origin, and name. And they have to select the answer to all 5 of those questions. For all 5 pieces of those cheese.
I'm like sweating bullets just thinking about it.
No, you're sweating bullets because it's really hot in this container.
Well, I mean, I, for one, am thrilled. I'm so excited to come to the competition. And I think that everyone listening who is a cheese lover should make it a point to come to Larkin on Saturday, June 26th for this competition/festival/musical extravaganza.
Oh yes, there will be live music. We will have DJ sets by JC Love, aka Jason Hines of Neo Jardari, as well as Carlos Sofront from Zingerman's Deli. There will also be a live 30-minute set of crazy original music by The Beat Poet and their friends.
Fantastic.
It's going to be wild.
And what's the website again so everyone can
www.cheesemongerinvitational.com. One word.
Well, Adam, thank you so much for taking time out on a Sunday to come to Roberta's and eat fried chicken with me.
Thank you for serving us fried chicken on Sunday.
This has been fantastic. And I hope you're going to come back and maybe bring your dad on the show.
I'm going to bring Pops, big old Joe.
That'll be the day. Can't wait for it.
Thank you.
Join us next Sunday for another episode of Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. See you in a week.